Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am the tech editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. And across from me, sitting in his usual seat, sipping some tea, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Welcome to the technology podcast that's out of this world.
Okay, then.
That's going to make no sense to you because you didn't hear what we were talking about immediately before we hit record.
At least, I hope you didn't.
Yeah, I hope. That's really up to Liz. Let's start this Apple-licious episode with a little listener mail. This listener mail comes from Chris, K-R-I-S. And Chris says, I just wanted to see what you would say about @Jason pranking the Twitter world about the iPad just to get an extra 20,000 followers. Is it immoral or against some code of the internet? Also, do you still think the iPad is too awkward a form factor or worth buying? Chris. Well, Chris, we'll get into what Jason Calacanis, that's the person behind @Jason, what he did a little bit later. But first we're going to talk about the iPad, something that everyone has been talking about ever since Apple first unveiled it on, it was just 2 days before we started recording this podcast.
That's true. That's true. That would be January 27th, 2010.
Yes, a Wednesday.
Yep. And
a cold Wednesday.
And Apple has a tendency to not tell you what's coming up at their announcements, but making this sort of veiled reference with graphics and some sort of
tagline.
Basically, they
come see our latest creation was the tagline, yes. Essentially,
and had lots of splashy colors on the invite, mm-hmm. But everybody sort of knew what was going to go on because for weeks beforehand, if you're tuning in very late and this is all old news to you. We'd been talking about the possibility that Apple was going to come out with a tablet computer of some sort.
Now, you say weeks, but in reality, we're talking years.
Well, it's true. Yeah. I mean, this is something that's been going on for many years.
Okay. So I remember last year that 2009, that there were rumors when Steve Jobs was going to return to Apple, because right. he took a medical leave starting in the beginning of the year. There were rumors that when he would return also with the announcement of this tablet device, which had already been in the rumor mill for quite some time at that point.
Oh, yeah.
So this is more than 6 months ago. And first of all, Steve Jobs did not appear at the press release that everyone thought he was going to appear in back in June. He remained off stage. And then second of all, there was no mention of the tablet. And then there was another Apple event mentioned, announced for September of 2009. Again, everyone went bonkers thinking that the tablet, this has got to be it. This is when they're going to finally announce this tablet thing, whatever it may be. But of course that was an iPod event. It was all about their iPod line and updates to it. Had nothing to do with the tablet. They made no mention of it. And, there were rumors coming out that, okay, well, they're going to announce it sometime in February of 2010. At the beginning of 2010, Apple, there were rumors that Apple was going to hold an event at the end of January. And that would finally be when we hear about the tablet. And as the end of January neared, first it was confirmed that yes, indeed, they were going to hold an event. And then it became pretty much a certainty among most people on the internet that they were, in fact, going to mention some sort of tablet device. And, I was kind of hoping that they wouldn't, just to see what would happen.
Yeah, that there is sort of a,
almost like a Schadenfreude thing.
Yeah, sort of a letdown that they actually announced what everyone thought that they were going to announce.
But it was the iPad that they announced, which some people have referred to as an oversized iPod Touch. I think even though I am personally skeptical of this device and the usefulness of this device, I think that's not entirely fair. Actually, I think that it is unfair to classify it as a giant iPod Touch. It is definitely more than that. Mm-hmm. But I can see why people would be tempted to call it that, because after 2 years of speculation, I'm pretty sure that any device Apple unveiled, no matter how amazing it was bound to disappoint people, because after 2 years, I mean, how can you live up to that kind of anticipation? Unless it had a direct line to heaven and could make you milkshakes, I'm pretty sure that you were going to be disappointed, and on some level, no matter what it did.
Okay. Well, since I actually wrote a blog post about this a few days ago, the day of its release, and before we go further, why don't I since I'm the writer, I can plagiarize myself. Why don't I just tell you what it is and what it can do?
Hit me with
it. And then we can actually talk about what it means.
Sounds good.
Okay, so it's half an inch thin and weighs 1.5 pounds. It's got a 9.7-inch in-plane switching IPS backlit LED display. It's got a proprietary Apple designed 1 gigahertz processor that runs a version of the iPhone OS, and it can run iPod Touch and iPhone applications without modifying them. Although developers can write new versions of those applications that take advantage of the larger screen size. Mm-hmm. You can watch movies on it. You can watch TV shows on it. YouTube. It's got the YouTube app, so you can watch videos from YouTube on it. You can listen to music. Hey, you know, that's a giant iPod Touch.
It has an iTunes app on it.
Yep. So that means you can download and listen to, music on iTunes U and other content, mm-hmm. podcasts.
Hey.
You can read ebooks on it. There's an application that they put on there called iBooks that will allow you to read books from a number of different publishers.
It's got a very slick interface.
Yes. Yes. It looks sort of like Bookshelf. Actually, it looks a little bit like Delicious Library for the Mac, ever seen that mm-hmm. application. Mm-hmm. And Apple has signed deals with publishers including Hachette, HarperCollins, Macmillan, Penguin, and Simon & Schuster. It has built-in Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. But if you want 3G connectivity, you have to pay $130 extra for that.
And it's 802.11n.
Yeah, only Wi-Fi. N?
I
didn't know that.
That's what it said on the
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is actually a faster and has longer range than the previous versions. And let's see, there is a dock if you want it. You can dock it and attach it to your basically set it up so that it functions like a laptop screen in front of you. And you can buy a keyboard, although it doesn't come with a keyboard. In form factor, it actually does look very much like the iPod Touch because it's got a virtual keyboard on the screen.
Right.
The only button is the one you know, the round button and I guess the power on off button.
I do maintain that the on-screen keyboard is awkward if you're going to do extensive data entry. If you're just typing a couple of notes in or whatever, it's not so bad. Otherwise, if I were to own this device, I would probably want the keyboard accessory if I were ever planning on, say, composing an email longer than two sentences. Mm-hmm. I would probably want that just because I find it very irritating to use on-screen keyboards. I'm a very fast typist, and it's frustrating to get slowed down to that level.
Well, speaking of productivity, in addition to App Store apps, Apple is offering a version of its iWork software, which includes Pages, which is a word processor, Keynote, which is a presentation software, and Numbers, a spreadsheet program, for $9.99 each.
Mm-hmm.
There are three different versions, 16 gigabytes, 32 gigabytes, and 64 gigabytes of space. They go $4.99, $5.99, and $6.99, and that's for the Wi-Fi only. If you want the 3G, add $130 each on top of that.
Now, the 3G is only going to – that's you're going to have to wait an extra month.
And you also have to pay for an AT&T contract for $30 a month for data.
It's actually not a contract.
It's not a contract?
It's non-contract. It's prepaid.
Okay.
Prepaid. So you prepay however many months you want, and it's $15 or $14.99 mm-hmm. for up to 250 megabytes of data for a month, mm-hmm. or $30, $29.99 for what they're calling unlimited. I'm saying what they're calling unlimited because in many of these cases, you later find out that what is referred to as unlimited ends up being very, very limited. Or at least there's a cap, which mm-hmm. means it's not really unlimited. But I don't know the details behind that. At any rate, it's $30 a month, and you do prepay, and it's not a contract.
Okay. And I also found out today that iBooks uses the accelerometer built in
right.
to the device so that you can read books in landscape or portrait mode. But if you were interested in buying books through the online bookstore that Apple has set up with all these publishers, you have to be in the United States because currently the licensing agreements do not permit you to buy stuff outside the United States at this time.
Right.
But,
well, and we knew that Apple had been really pushing to make deals with publishers mm-hmm. leading up to this announcement. So this is still early days yet. It may be that by the time these devices launch – that there'll be much more comprehensive deals in place. So by the time you buy one of these things or you're able to buy one of these things, that problem may be solved. We don't know yet.
Right, right. And I have a quote for you, Jonathan.
Quote me.
Because I'm just waiting to see what you say. I could probably take a good 10-minute break after this.
Okay.
You're familiar with Nicholas Carr.
Yes.
The technology writer.
Yes.
He actually wrote the blog post that inspired the article that I wrote for the site called "Why" or "How the Apple, Google, cloud computer will work." He wrote a post for NPR, National Public Radio, on the
right.
website.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a quote from him. I'm just explaining in case no one else has heard
right,
it.
Oh, right, sure.
Especially for people who are outside the United States.
I'm trying to brace myself.
"The PC era ended yesterday morning at 10 o'clock Pacific time when Steve Jobs stepped onto a San Francisco stage to unveil the iPad, Apple's version of a tablet computer."
All right, folks, strap yourselves in. I want to have a little bit of discussion with Mr. Carr here. Mr. Carr, I greatly respect you. You are a very intelligent person, probably more intelligent than I am.
I'm going to go take a break.
Could you give me some more tea while you're out? So before I get into it and explain exactly how much I disagree with that statement, which is completely – I'll just go ahead and say that. I completely disagree with that statement.
Well, he actually softens it. I just wanted to quote him on that one.
Excellent.
Go read the post because it really is kind of interesting.
Okay. So I shouldn't just judge the whole thing by that one quote.
I wanted to that is an example of what a lot of people are saying.
Yeah.
Because there's so much hype behind it.
I think it's definitely too premature to say that. So here are a couple of other things we should add before I really get into it. One, the battery life.
It's
supposed to be around 10 hours.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's even if you're watching video, according to what they said at the press release, that mm-hmm. you could get 10 hours of video on this thing, which is – I mean, video is a very demanding application. So if that's true, that's pretty impressive. I'd be very surprised to see that.
Yeah.
Now, we have to remember that often the actual battery life tends to be a little different from what the advertised battery life is. But Let's just go ahead and assume that that's true. Here are some things it does not have right now, as of the recording of this podcast. Now, this could all change by the time it launches. Well, not all of it, but some of it. It does not have the ability to multitask.
Okay.
You can't run multiple applications at the same time. I would argue that alone invalidates Mr. Carr's statement.
Well, before we go and you jump, since you haven't actually read this, I will tell you why he said this.
Okay, please do.
He said that the tablet in launching the iPad, Apple has created the missing piece of the non-PC segment. It's basically shattered it into all the little pieces now, such as on the smaller end, smartphones, smart books, netbooks, and now the tablet in between. So he said, basically, people don't really necessarily need a PC. You will find find something in that spectrum that if you want to take your laptop with you, you no longer need something that large. You have something in between a desktop and a smartphone for you to use.
That still has me.
Okay, cool. Excellent. I just wanted to clarify
brimming with
that was his
rage.
Reasoning. I wanted to include
I understand his reasoning. First of all, I would argue that, one, the tablet form factor is not new. It's been around for years, more than 2 decades, really, or around 2 decades, I would say.
True.
And so, therefore, if something's been around for around 20 years and it has not revolutionized the technology industry, it may very well be that it's not, it's an also-ran anyway. Because the tablet is neither fish nor fowl. It is not a smartphone. It is not a computer. The tablet, the iPad specifically, cannot really exist as its own standalone computing device. You can run a lot of little cool apps on it, which are great. And I don't mean to dismiss the apps when I say little cool apps. They do generally tend to be less complex and less demanding than full computer programs, but many of them are incredibly innovative and very useful. I have apps on my smartphone and I love them. At the same time, I don't confuse them with fully fledged computer applications.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't run those. You essentially need a computer to sync your iPad to on occasion. So you can't just get away with having the iPad as your primary computing device. You can't use it to make calls like you can with a smartphone, so you can't have it replace that. What?
Well, now that they've unblocked using VoIP on 3G networks,
you could maybe,
that just happened yesterday.
You can use some VoIP technology. This is true, but
the Skype application, if you used a pluggable, a third-party microphone,
I'm just wondering.
Theoretically,
I'm wondering why would you do it?
Why would you do it? Nah, that's a better question.
Yeah, because it doesn't, like, if you happen to have it sitting around, then sure, you can pick it up and make a phone call. But otherwise, I mean, you're not going to carry this thing around with you to make, it's not going to replace a smartphone.
And then there's the quality.
There's
the quality of VoIP calls, which is,
and as Chris makes his point, I will continue. So there's no camera yet. That might come out on a future edition of the iPad.
I bet that will happen.
But with no camera, you can't do things like video conferencing, which to me seemed crazy because they showed in the press release a really cool use of it as a presentation device. Where they showed how the presentation, the keynote presentation software works on the iPad, and it was legitimately impressive. It looked slick. It was intuitive. I thought it was really well done. But if you're going to create something that does something that well, you're suggesting essentially to your audience, hey, this is a great business tool. If you don't put a camera in there where you can do video conferencing, it's not really a great business tool. It's an incomplete business tool. Mm-hmm. Just as I would argue, it's an incomplete everything tool. I called it earlier while I was in the office, and I think this holds water. I think the iPad is the perfect tool to browse the web if we were talking about Web 1.0. Web 1.0, what I mean by that is it doesn't really ultimately mean anything. It's a marketing term. But in general, what I mean is the old style websites where you consumed the content that was there, but you didn't contribute to it. You would go to a website, you would read what was there, and then you would leave. And that's all there was to it. You might go to websites now and watch a couple of videos and leave, and that's all there is to it. But a lot of the websites out there today are what we would refer to as Web 2.0 sites, where contribution and participation is a major factor of browsing. And I argue that the iPad and its on-screen keyboard device is not the most useful if you want to do a lot of contributing while you're on the web. And I don't know about anyone else. I mean, there are probably plenty of people out there who all they do is consume stuff on the web. They don't necessarily participate in discussions or anything like that. For them, this device might be perfect. And I won't argue against that. I think if it works for your lifestyle, great. Buy one. Buy as many as you like. But for people who do lots of participation across the web, I think trying to use this as your main device or even as a supplemental device that you're using while you're like sitting on the couch or whatever will ultimately be frustrating just because it's too hard to input data into something that kind of requires two hands. And I mean, when you think about it, you're typing on the same surface that you're looking at. So you're either typing on it by holding it in one hand and using the other hand to peck out words, or you're going to have to put it on your lap or on a tabletop or something and try and type with two hands that way, which is why I argue that you can't really do extensive data entry. That's why I call it the Web 1.0 web browser. Jobs, when he got up there, said that netbooks don't do anything well. They do lots of stuff, but they don't do anything well, mm-hmm. including web browsing. I argue that netbooks are superior to the tablet in the web browsing experience simply because it's easier to type stuff in. It may not be as slick an interface, but they're going to be able to do things that you can't do with the tablet or the iPad, I should say. I keep calling it the tablet because that's what we've been calling it for years, but
yeah,
the iPad. That's not to say the iPad's a bad device. I think it looks beautiful. I think the stuff it does pretty well. I think the stuff it doesn't do is pretty damning because there are other devices out on the market that do those things. There's an Android tablet that's in the works that does all the stuff that you think the tablet, the iPad should be able to do. Will it be successful? Probably not. I don't think so. I think the iPad, despite all the things that I find wrong with it, is going to be incredibly successful. I also think that 80% of the people who buy one, 3 months after they buy it, are going to set it down and forget that they have it because it's just not going to be instrumental in their daily lives, and it'll just be a cool piece of technology that doesn't get used very much.
All right.
Now, what I also want to say, no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. You've heard me rant for like 7-8 minutes straight. Chris actually left. He's brought back Arby's. So roast beef, Tyler? Would you like roast beef?
Nothing
Tyler
says roast beef. Nothing says iPad like a carton of curly fries. Well, I think the funny thing about the iPad is that it's actually about tablet computers in general. It's more of a niche thing. And I think that loaning Apple's name and interface to it suddenly makes it a consumer thing where it really probably should have been before, but nobody really wanted to mess with it. I've seen them used in a lot of cases. You know, there are lots and lots of tablets used in the medical industry right now.
Sure.
Because they're really handy for
artists use various kinds of tablets and architects use various kinds of tablets. There are a lot of many good reasons to use them. And like you said, it hasn't really broken into the consumer market. I think partly because as convenient as a tablet is, it's mm-hmm. really convenient if you keep it in your house.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not necessarily the convenient device that you take with you on the go because it's about the same size as a netbook. It's not as thick as a netbook. It's not as heavy as a netbook, but you're going to need a bag about the size of a netbook bag to carry this thing around in mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. a protective case so that you don't get any scratches on that screen, that gorgeous screen. You don't want that to get all scratched up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it's just not as portable as what, you know, it's not portable enough to be a big enough draw compared to a netbook, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Now, I do think there is a market for this. I think there are people who will think this is really cool and they'll buy one and they'll be very pleased with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think people along my line of thought just don't see a place. Like, if I want to watch a movie, then I'm going to either watch it on my computer, on my DVD player, or through Roku on my television.
Right.
Or I'll hook up a computer to my TV and watch it that way.
Yeah.
But for people who don't have that kind of level of comfort with technology, this thing makes sense.
Yeah.
So it might be that the reason why I have so many problems with this is because I am not the target market for this device.
Mm-hmm.
And people who are the target market, they may have nothing but great things to say about it, which that's fine. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, and but I think there are other groups that might latch on to the iPad that might not have been in that other segments of the population. For example, education. It might be an opportunity for schools to get a computer that they can use in that case, because they're less expensive than other forms of laptops. Now, maybe not netbooks. And there are a lot of people who will argue with me on that and say, well, you can get, a very cheap notebook for under $400. Well, that's probably true.
Yeah.
But I think that there are people that might try to adopt it. And, I want to say too that I'm not necessarily in the market to run out and buy an iPad as soon as they hit store shelves, but I would like to mess with it because, I personally like the OS X interface,
mm-hmm.
and I would like to buy something that I could carry with me to, on the rare occasions when I do travel. But I don't really want to fork over the money for a whole notebook. And I'm basically going to try to get on the web and do email. Now, as you pointed out, without any flash right at the moment, there are some limitations to it.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in looking at it and messing around with it to see if I could use it for that purpose because it is less expensive than a full-fledged Apple notebook. And there are other people who would tell me, why don't you just, get a netbook and make it a Hackintosh. Well, I could probably do that too, except for the whole them locking out the Atom processor thing.
Right. Well,
I think that it'll be interesting to see how far Apple's marketing can take this because there is a limit to the market for this, I think, literally, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. whether or not there's a desire, the desire sight of the market will, how far they will take it.
So, the tablet doesn't really compete against netbooks other than the fact that Jobs came out and said netbooks suck. Essentially, Jobs kind of threw the gauntlet down. But really, the tablet's not in the same space as the netbook, in my opinion.
Not really.
It's also not really in the same space as e-readers, which is the other device that people have said, is the tablet an e-reader killer? Is it a Kindle killer?
I would kind of argue that it's not even really in the same space as the tablets that have gone before it and are being marketed alongside it.
Well, no, because a lot of the tablets that are marketed beside it and came before it are more of a standalone computing device.
Yes.
They don't, mm-hmm. they aren't necessarily as slick and easy to use. They don't have all the features that the iPad has, but they do have the ability to run multiple processes and
yeah.
they can run more fully fledged programs than the iPad can. But, that being said, getting back to the whole Kindle thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I was asked about that. Like, do I think it's trouble for the Kindle? And I think that all depends upon what you're in the market for. If people are in the market for an e-reader, then I think if you compare the two devices and the experience you get between the two devices, things like the battery life and the ease of the e-ink display on your eyes in comparison to a backlit display – those sort of things will, and the price, because the Kindle's cheaper,
yes.
Will kind of help the Kindle win out. Also, the massive Amazon library helps.
Okay.
Barnes & Noble Nook, same sort of thing. You've got the Barnes & Noble store behind that and the e-ink display, and it's cheaper than the iPad. If, however, you're looking for a device that does more than just e-books,
mm-hmm.
then I think the iPad wins out because even though it's more expensive, it's not prohibitively expensive.
Yes.
It's less than twice the amount of the Kindle
yes.
and the Nook, but it does way more than the Kindle or Nook do. So if you're in the market for something that does more than just displays books and you don't really care about the battery life issue, then the iPad wins out. So I think it'll probably take a bite out of ebook reader sales,
mm-hmm.
but for people who are specifically looking for that e-reader experience, I don't think that's going to dissuade them from buying a Nook or a Kindle.
Okay, three things.
Yeah.
Number one, the advantage that the iPad has as an ebook reader, strictly as an ebook reader, over the Kindle and other e-ink screens is its color interface. And people
yes.
who really actually need stuff like graphs, charts, color illustrations, or really, really want that, you're
yeah.
not going to get that in the anything with an e-ink interface.
That's true.
Of course, if you want to read a novel that doesn't require illustrations, you're going to be using a lot of power to light that with an iPad, where you wouldn't with a Kindle. The yep. Kindle is probably going to be the better bet. Number two, the Kindle, as their Amazon has also started offering to open up the Kindle to third-party applications.
That's true.
In development. So there is a possibility that Amazon is already anticipating Apple's move into this and starting to plan for their next move.
It's going to have to be a limited suite of applications, though, just because the display technology isn't designed to show things like animation.
Right.
So it's going to have to be stuff that has lots of different static screens, really.
Yeah, unless they have other plans.
I think that we're going to see things like text-based adventures. Zork is making a big comeback.
Why not?
Who knows? I don't know.
And then the third thing.
Thing number three.
One thing that I saw people complain about the iBooks thing is that the cost of the books is going back up.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because Amazon is buying the books from the publishers and they're doing what they're doing with it. But Apple made a deal directly with the publishers,
right,
which is to the publisher's advantage. And now that and I think that's going to change the Kindle experience, too, because their agreements, once these things settle in, now that it's public knowledge that Apple is working with these publishers, that's going to force Barnes and Noble and Amazon into a bit of a pricing struggle because there's no guarantee of that, but I have the feeling it's going to put some pressure on them.
If the iPad is successful, and I have no doubts that it will be, but if the iPad is successful, then the publishers will have the leverage because they'll say, hey, we can just move over here to this, and then it'll become the standard and everybody will use that. They can play Apple off of everybody else. But if no one buys the iPad, or if the iPad is just kind of if it gets some popularity but it doesn't hit the mainstream consciousness, and if people don't start buying books on the iPad, then the publishers are stuck with a model where, yeah, they can price books the way they want and they get the deal the way they want, but no one's buying the books. So then they end up having to crawl back to Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Oh, by the way, publishers don't crawl.
Yeah.
They have people to do that for them.
Well, I'm also interested to see, since it's still early days yet, I'm interested to see if there's an iBooks app for the iPhone and iPod Touch.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Because
they've got the Kindle app for the iPhone.
Yeah.
So now you're wondering if that's going to, you know, presume it would come to the iPad. One thing I wanted to point out that I thought was kind of cool, you mentioned it earlier about being able to use iPod applications on the iPad. It has two different modes. You can view it in a smaller window, so essentially you're looking at it as if it were on an iPod Touch or on an iPhone.
Which I'm sure will be very strange.
Or you can increase its size so that it's looking more natural on the iPad. It doubles the pixels.
Yeah, it's going to look blocky.
Yeah, it's going to look a little blocky. The resolution's not going to be as good, but it does increase the size so that you can view it in a larger frame. So I thought that was kind of neat. But we had a question in that email.
Okay.
Jason Calacanis.
Right.
So what Calacanis did was he claimed that he got hold of the iPad early on. Mm-hmm. And in that claim, he said that the device had two cameras, an HDTV tuner, a thumbpad user interface on either side, had fingerprint recognition for security measures. It connected to other devices through Wi-Fi, so you could have like a networked gaming session with a whole bunch of people. He said that the gaming would be huge. So it had a solar panel on the back to recharge because it only had like 4 hours worth of gaming life in it, but the solar panel had unprecedented charging capabilities.
Really?
Turns out he was just joking. I mean, it was all just a joke. And people have claimed otherwise, saying that it was a ploy for him to get lots and lots of Twitter followers, and that this was really just kind of a dirty, underhanded way of trying to boost his popularity. I don't know Mr. Calacanis personally. I have corresponded with him in the past, and I've listened to a lot of his discussions on various shows. I'm fairly confident in saying that that this was probably just a joke. It wasn't necessarily meant as a publicity stunt to get his name over, because his publicity stunts are far more transparent. He has done them in the past by doing lots of giveaways and things like that. So Calacanis is not above doing that sort of thing. But I think in this case it was just him being silly. He was just trying to create the most ridiculously lavish tablet idea possible, mm-hmm. and then see if anyone would buy it. And he gave people lots of outs, lots of clues that this was just a joke. And a lot of people bought it anyway, and then were upset when they found out later that it wasn't true. but yeah, I don't think this was – I don't think he broke any kind of code of ethics or unwritten code of the internet. The unwritten code of the internet's very serious, and if you break it, we will find you. But I don't think
the internet
think
court
that.
Is still out on this.
Yeah. And we can't tell you what the rules are, but we can tell you you don't want to break them. But yeah, I think this was just a case of a joke gone kind of too far. I mean, I read the original post and I just like, I don't know how anyone necessarily believed this, except for the fact that after 2 years of waiting, you kind of believe anything.
Yeah.
So, well, that's our initial discussion of the iPad. Yeah. Of course, neither of us have had the chance to get one in our hands yet.
Actually, very, very few people have at this point. And, you know, people ask us all the time on Twitter and in email and on the blogs what we think is this means. And we can honestly, we can really only conjecture at this point. It's going to take some time before the public can really get their hands on it and developers can develop for it.
Some Apple stores might have some demo models out now, but, I haven't tried to check it out yet just because it's been a crazy week. But maybe when I get my hands on it, I'll get it. You know, maybe I'll see. And I think it's
really
priced really, really aggressively for an Apple product.
It really is.
And so I think that's going to help it out a lot too. And as I said, there's probably a market out there that I just don't understand that will eat this up, and maybe they'll use it forever. But I just see it as a flash in the pan ultimately.
And there's also an anti-Apple market, and they've been very vocal in saying it's just a piece of junk.
Right. I don't think it's a piece of junk.
I would like to at least see it before I can tell for sure.
Yeah. And like I said, maybe when I hold it, maybe I'll say, you know what? I was totally wrong. I want one, and I can see why I would use it. And that could still happen. So don't write me and say that I hate Apple. I don't hate Apple. I own Apple products, and I'm willing to be proven wrong, but the tablet format for me has never really made sense. And that goes beyond Apple. That I'm talking about across manufacturers. The only tablet-like device I've been tempted to get is the Lenovo U1 because it's also a netbook.
Yes.
Or notebook. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't call it a netbook because Lenovo will say I broke one of those rules.
Yeah.
And then they'll send someone after
me. No, that is a very nifty device, I gotta admit.
All right. Well, that wraps up our very long discussion about the iPad and leads us to a little more listener mail. This listener mail comes from Kate, and Kate says, "Hey guys, I wanted to mention one of my favorite Easter eggs of days past. It's changed now, but a few years ago, you could type the word failure into Google and click I'm feeling lucky, and it would take you directly to the official whitehouse.gov bio of George W. Bush. Oh. It always made me giggle. Kate, the reason why I did this was to correct a little bit.
Really?
That's not an Easter egg.
That's not an Easter egg?
No. No. The way it worked was that people essentially gamed the system so that when you typed in failure, the top link would come up as whitehouse.gov.
And so people would click on that.
Right.
To make it a higher search rank.
Or they would link to it. You know, so it was not necessarily Google making a political statement. When you click the I'm feeling lucky, it essentially takes you to the top.
The very search.
The top search result for whatever the term is. So that was not necessarily Google putting something into the algorithm specifically as a political statement.
And it wasn't anybody messing with the White House website.
Right.
It was third-party people.
I mean, I guess theoretically it could have been someone in Google who did it, but as far as I've read, no one is willing to cop to it. So it may just have been a bunch of people who very diligently worked so that failure would lead to that bio. So I don't think that necessarily counts as an Easter egg. So if you guys want to send us some comments, questions, you want to yell at me because you think I hate Apple, write us. Our address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. Check out our blogs. Check out our live show. Check out the website because we got tons of cool articles on there. Trust us, we'll have an iPad article up as soon as it is possible to do so. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the new TechStuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage.
brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's brand new, season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.